you have to do that with an attitude of deep gratitude for what they've accomplished.
Yeah.
And you communicate that, like, thank you, I honor you. And so, but there is tension there, because sometimes when you try to go farther in your generation, sometimes your parents can interpret that as
you're leaving us.
Yeah. Yeah. You're judging the way we raised you.
Yeah.
And you know, we can just sit down and have that conversation with them. No, I'm not. I am deeply appreciated. And a lot of times that's a trigger. Like, I need to demonstrate my gratitude more clearly to my parents.
Hey guys, welcome to the Dads Building Teams podcast, where we chat about exactly that, dads building their family teams. Every week, me and my friend and mentor, Jeremy Pryor, alternate interviewing another father friend of ours about his particular journey as a father, pursuing the call to build a multi-generational team on mission. As always, let us know what you thought of today's episode on social media at Family Teams. And without further ado, enjoy today's episode.
All right, guys. Well, welcome to the Family Teams Fathered podcast. I'm joined here by my friend Michael Beausejour, and we're going to have a good conversation about fatherhood. Before we dive into his story, I want to read our Fatherhood Insight and just talk about the idea of receiving God as our model father. Why did God choose to reveal himself as a father? When Jesus first taught his disciples to pray, he told them to begin by saying the words, "Our Father." And Paul instructs his believers that the Holy Spirit is going to help our hearts say, "Abba, Father." When we're born, we don't fully understand the concept of father. It's like an empty bucket. And for the next 20 plus years, our earthly fathers fill that bucket through their actions. And every one of us has strong emotions to what's inside that bucket. Those actions determine our initial reactions to the concept we call fatherhood. Then God comes and says, "You know that concept called father? That's what I'm like. That's who I am. And I'd like to be your father." Then each of us looks inside the bucket and wonders, do we want to have a relationship with God like that if he's like a father? Paul Witz, the professor of psychology at the University of New York, made an interesting discovery when he peered into the personal lives of famous atheists and famous Christians. He detailed his findings in a book called Faith of the Fatherless, The Psychology of Atheism. And here's a summary of his findings. By studying the lives of numerous famous militant atheists, from the old atheists like Nietzsche, Sartre, Freud, to the new atheists, Witz discovers a startling common pattern. Atheism arises in people with dead, absent, or abusive fathers. By contrast, prominent defenders of religious belief like Blaise Pascal, Wilberforce, G.K. Chesterton were blessed with attentive, loving, and caring fathers. So God made quite a risky decision to reveal himself as a father. Or to say that more accurately, God is a father, and he decided to give us earthly fathers so we'd have an idea of what he's like. That's why we all need to think deeply about what's in this bucket called fatherhood. We need to get out that bucket, dump out its contents, and really sort out which actions, characteristics, and elements of God reflect God's fatherhood and which ones don't. I heard this summarized recently this way. We look to our fathers to understand God, but when we mature, we look to God to understand fatherhood. This is the critical transition. When we're young, we have no choice but to understand fatherhood primarily through our earthly fathers. But as we age, we grow to understand the character of God, and that needs to allow us to grow in our understanding and refine this vision of fatherhood. The author of Hebrews makes the comparison in chapter 11 when he writes, or chapter 12, "Since we respected our earthly fathers who disciplined us, shouldn't we submit even more to the discipline of the Father of our spirits and live forever?" So what does that mean? So three things. First, guard carefully what gets into the bucket called fatherhood. If your earthly father did things that were ungodly, we need to clean those items out of the concept of fatherhood. That wasn't them being a good father. That was them expressing their fallen humanity. Second, be careful what you put into your own kids' or your children's fatherhood buckets. We all get to build up what our kids think about when they think about fatherhood. And we all make mistakes, but we have a lot of control over whether or not our kids love or hate fatherhood. So we need to do that really carefully. And I know that's a great responsibility. And the third thing is let God's character continually inform your understanding of what it means to be a father. So that process is ongoing. The more we understand God, the more close we get to God, it's important that we don't just think about that's building a relationship with God. That is helping us understand fatherhood. Our earthly fathers are our surrogates for understanding fatherhood. We needed them to get started on this journey of understanding the nature of a father, but we must make this transition. We must allow God, our Abba Father, to show us what fatherhood truly is. And by doing this, we'll both deepen our intimacy with God and grow to become better reflections of God's character to our own children. So, Michael,
yeah,
what kinds of things is anything that stirs up for you? How do you react to some of those concepts?
Yeah, well, I think it really, you know, my whole aim in being a father, I just had my fifth kid, is that I really believe what this is saying. I want to be to them. I am the image of God to them. And my hope is that we relate to one another in a way that when they grow older, they can make the transition from seeing the Father as God to relating to God our Father in an easy way. And there's a lot that goes into that, but that's basically what we want to try to do.
Does that feel like a heavy responsibility? How do you think
about it? Oh my gosh, having kids is like the most refining thing because it just keeps you so honest, you know, because they imitate you. They become like who they hang out with and where they are and what they see people doing. And so that's why my wife Sammy and I try to make it so that we're with our kids a lot and that they see us and we're constantly held accountable by them, because when we see behavior we don't like in them, they've probably got it from us. And so we're being refined as believers the same way we're trying to refine them.
Yeah. So that process of in real time, they're trying to figure out who God is and you're kind of that surrogate. They have to learn those things often by watching you, by watching Sammy, by thinking about what are you guys doing? How are you guys like exhibiting God's character? And then knowing that that's just always going to be a messy process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, it's also very countercultural. If you live in the United States, because, there's this thing where people want their kids to kind of choose and decide and kind of this relativity of truth and stuff. And God, our Father, just flat out says, this is truth and this is how I want you to live. And it feels offensive to the culture to take that same stance with your own kids and say, this is truth and this is how I want you to live. And I expect you to live this way.
Yeah. It's almost like our culture says, if it was possible that you could keep that bucket empty until your kids turn 18 or until your kids are older, you'd be doing them a huge favor. Whereas the Bible really is like, God is from the very, very moment that infant comes into the world, he's taking the risk of saying, no, there has to be something in the bucket.
Yeah.
Even if it's bad, which
is
like,
people want to keep that bucket in. That's good. That's a good point. Yeah, absolutely. There's a risk in doing anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, that's right. You have to, in my story, you know, it's just, I have my father's journey was from kind of a terrible father to a really amazing father. And, I still have to sort of sort through that bucket, and I count myself as blessed.
Yeah.
Right? So I can imagine that it's really hard for people to sort of navigate kind of getting, especially a new dad, getting the bad stuff out and the good stuff.
Yeah. Really thinking through what that experience was like with your own dad is a huge part. I want to dive into that. Tell us a little bit though, real quick, about your team, your family, how long you've been married, kids.
So my wife is Samantha, and we've been married for, it'll be 7 years in September. And we basically have had kids as fast as we could.
Mm-hmm.
We had, it's kind of sounds silly, but one of my like dreams was to be a husband and a father. And that's always been something that I've been, and I remember when I had my second kid, I was like, it's time to celebrate this. We've done it. We have like a family.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have 5-year-old girl, 4-year-old boy, 2.5-year-old girl, 1.5-year-old boy, and then a newborn.
So 5 under 5 or 5 and under, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah. There's a week wow. where our top 4 are under 4. So
wow.
Yeah,
that's intense.
So it's been a really amazing journey. Like, you know, you have to be very, very proactive with a family like this yeah. to not go crazy.
Yeah, man. So we're going to get into some of those practical things, because that's one of the reasons why I wanted you here. I know you guys are really trying to figure out, how do we keep our heads above water? You're in the thick of it, you know,
yes.
right now. And I
yeah.
think that's really important for a lot of people who listen to this are in similar situation. But I want to get into your journey a little bit in the past. Like, you know, you've mentioned your dad, you know, he's a good friend of mine. He's a man who I respect, you know, the top of my list in this city. He's an amazing dad and leader in our city. And when I think about you and your dad, it's so much fun for me to watch you guys, because I can tell there's this father-son dynamic I just rarely get to watch, you know, and it's just fun to watch with you guys. And you mentioned that was a journey for your dad, for you.
Yeah.
Like, it took me back to, like, so how did this concept of fatherhood evolve for you in this passion that you sort of developed to build a family?
Yeah. And I'll say, would you agree that, like, when you say we look to our father to understand who God is,
yeah,
would you say that everyone, that happens to everyone, whether they want to or not?
Yeah, I do think so. I think that's it, at those early stages especially. I don't think, and that's one of the things that this particular professor is really trying to get to the bottom of. He's trying to say that a lot of these, not just atheists, but militant atheists, angry atheists. It's kind of funny, because an angry atheist sounds almost like an oxymoron. Who are they angry at if there's no God, right? And I know Christopher Hitchens, who is a really famous militant atheist, his brother actually wrote a book, I think it was called, like, Rage Against God. And his whole book was about how angry his brother is at God. You know, I don't believe he exists, and I'm really angry at him for
yeah.
it. And it's like, who are they angry at? And the answer that I think this particular professor is trying to drive at is they're probably really angry at their father, and they don't know it. And they don't know that they are projecting a lot of their sort of frustration with their father
yeah.
onto God. Although in some regards, that's fair, because God himself, and this is the tension, he actually gave us fathers so that we would know him. So he was taking that risk. And that's why we find ourselves in such a critical position as fathers. But taking a step back, yeah, I think people, they do. They get very confused and caught up in this question of like, how do I think about God, given
yeah.
the dad that we all...
Yeah, because when I think of my story, I think I had no choice but to be influenced by my dad.
Right.
You know, like, you can't...
Even guys who have dads that have abandoned them have been deeply influenced by their dad. Right.
Right.
Just their
yeah.
absence.
Yeah, I mean, you see it in literature, you see
yeah.
it in the people around you, you feel it in your own relationships. So that's a really cool insight. And I looked up the definition of father. Well, I looked up the definition of parent, and then it was like a mother or father. And then you look up the definition of father, and it says a man who's in relation with a child. So just because you have a kid doesn't mean you're a father.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be in relation, you know, with that child. So my story, starting with my dad, it really starts with his dad, who was a alcoholic. We're from Canada. He couldn't keep a job. They moved around a ton. They were very poor. And my dad's dad actually died a homeless man.
Mm-hmm.
And my father said, I'm not going to mess around with this. And so he started working extremely hard, because he was going to find money to get him out of the situation he was in, which is a very logical thing to do. And God also gifted him with a lot of intelligence. So he skipped seventh grade. He went from a French-speaking middle school to an English-speaking high school, or maybe vice versa. Skipped seventh grade, skipped 10th grade. He went to university, to one of the Canadian Ivy Leagues at the age of 16. Worked in McDonald's his whole way through there, paying for his school. And then by the time he was done his 4 years, he was managing this McDonald's, you know. So it's just a really hard worker and really smart. And he got on with Procter & Gamble. You know, if maybe 5 years into it, he was promoted to launch Procter & Gamble in Australia. And so I was born in Canada, and when we were about two, we moved to Australia. His career grew there. He did amazing there. He went to Japan and helped launch P&G there. We were in Japan for 3 years, and then he launched Japan and China, or sorry, P&G in China. And so he was not around a lot. He had this drive. He had a beautiful wife, four kids. And while we lived in Japan, we were involved in a really horrible earthquake. And it was 5:30 in the morning. He was already at work. A big steel frame product display case fell inches from his head. So he had a death scare, and he says, it started at him asking questions. He's more rich beyond his wildest dreams. He's got his family. He's got everything he could ever want. But there was emptiness. There was nothing there. Mm-hmm. And he ended up going on a walk to a Emmaus retreat, basically meeting Jesus and getting saved. And he came home and he was a changed man. He was reading the Bible. He stopped cursing. He even confessed a bunch of infidelity towards my mom. And she honestly is the hero of the family who she was actually a believer at the time. And she said, if Jesus forgave me, I can forgive you. And kept our family together.
How old were you kind of when you're?
I was about 10 years old.
Okay.
And so I was basically raised by my mother until then.
Okay. Because your dad was super busy.
He was just so busy. I mean, when we moved from Japan to China, we lived in Hong Kong and he worked in China. And so he would leave on a Monday morning or Sunday night and then get home on a Friday or Saturday. So he didn't even live with the family during the week. And it was really tough. It was tough on my mom. It was tough on us because this was some of these formative years.
Yeah.
And we really didn't, you know, go to church or, you know, my mom had a mom's Bible study, but that was about it, you know. So I was really raised like a pagan kind of until that point. And then he said, you know, as he grew in his relationship with God, he said, all right, enough's enough, move us back. That's how we got to Cincinnati. And so we came back here, he reduced his working hours and he started going to seminary. And was way more involved in our lives. We started having regular family meals, you know, that kind of stuff. And then he decided when he was kind of the global VP of marketing for P&G, he quit and became a pastor, you know, short time later.
Yeah, that's one of the weirdest, most amazing transitions.
Yeah.
To the pastor that I've ever heard is your dad going from that VP of marketing at one of the largest companies in the world
to a very small church. Yeah.
He's still going. I mean, he's such a faithful.
He's been there over 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years.
Now he worked with Henry Cloud for 5 years before he took the pastor position. He just was such a changed man.
Yeah.
And
you got to see that. I mean,
it really was weird because it was like, now there's rules in the house, you know, and now now we're going to church and now we're doing things that a new Christian who's trying to lead his family would do, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, when I think of, and I used to be critical of my dad.
When he was going through that transition or?
Yeah. And just when I became a believer, when I was kind of in college and just, you know, that he wasn't doing it right and whatever. And I think at one of those retreats, he said, don't criticize your parents, you know, just, it's not good. And God has really showed me that, you know, with where he came from and how he was raised, I mean, he did a really, really good job. He defied all the odds.
And generationally, it's like,
I mean,
your grandfather died a homeless.
Yeah.
that trajectory, and now your dad is this, like a city father. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty.
He's an amazing guy.
Wow.
And so he's really helped me in my walk with God to understand who I am by being there with me and being able to walk with me.
But it doesn't mean it's all easy. I mean, I know that part of what I'm describing here. It's like you can, it's difficult to know where this balance is, right? If you don't, I'm saying you should look at what's in that fatherhood bucket, which I think a lot of people might hear as criticize your father, right?
Right.
Because if you don't piece out the things that you think, I don't know if this is really God's character. I got this from my dad, or there's a difference between really trying to refine your understanding of God's character by thinking about your what's in that bucket called fatherhood and rebuking your parents. Like, and I think that that's the distinction. But I do think it's important to think about, because otherwise, I mean, again, God himself has sort of allowed us to understand who he is through our father. And I know one of my expectations is, and I'm encouraging my kids to do this, like, you have to sift out what is your dad's fallenness from God's character. I want you to love the idea of fatherhood primarily because I want you to love God. So if I'm really representing something that you just despise or have contempt for, I need to be really careful. But if I represent someone who's, you know, hey, I'm a fallen father, you know, this part of it almost facilitates the transition from, I'm just your earthly dad. I mean, I am doing my best. I love you and I want you to love me. But yeah, there does have come a time where, and maybe, I don't know, when you're in college, you kind of have to go through those moments. And I think sometimes it's hard not to like really get down on your parents. That's a really hard tension. I know a lot of people try to navigate.
Yeah. And it's really weird too, because around the same time I also had, as I became an adult, I kind of had, it dawned on me how much they sacrificed for me and how hard it is to raise kids.
Because you started.
And I remember going back to them and saying, I just want you to know that I recognize now that if I would have listened to you and done what you told me to do, my life would have been so much better. And I'm sorry, you know, that I'm trying to make that right.
So the wisdom of their words really started to resonate with you, but not until...
Not until I started becoming a dad and realizing how much this, how...
That's so good you talk to them like that too.
Yeah. It's important. You know, another thing we had the realization that my mom and dad were the first believers in their family. And they kind of set a family vision for us, you know, to be a family of irresistible influence. And I was over here kind of doing my own thing. And then I realized, whoa, hold on. If I want my kids to follow my vision, I need to follow my dad's vision. And he has one laid out that's really good and awesome, and it's on.
Yeah.
And I went to them, and Sammy and I kind of said, we're behind you. We see our roles as people who pass on your family vision. And because God put you guys as the ones he started with, and we want to kind of continue that on. Wow. And we want to set the example for our kids and their kids. And man, things got a lot better after that. And I remember having a conversation with them, and it was over, like how you do things at home. You know, maybe it was a mealtime thing or something like that. And I think sometimes maybe my mom or dad would feel like, if you're not doing exactly like we're doing it, like, you know, you think we're bad or something like that, you know? And I remember thinking about that. I can't remember the specific example of what it was. And just thinking, no, the reason that we are able to do our family the way we do it now is because we're standing on the shoulders of giants.
Right.
And you guys defeated so many things that now they're just non-issues for us. Poverty, being godless, you know, all this kind of stuff that we're now poised. And that's what I want for my kids. I want their families to be more God-honoring than our family is.
Right.
And I want to continue that and keep it going. And
good.
I think when we had that conversation, it was like, oh, okay.
That creates freedom. Yeah. I love that. Anytime you say, I want my children's, I want my ceiling to be my kid's floor. Like that idea, like we're building, to your point there, what happens in those generational transitions is that it's difficult for the second or third generation to see those giants that were slain by the previous generation. So we take all those things for granted. Like we don't, you can see this just broadly, generationally. Like we can criticize tiny, minute problems with our society, because we're not starving to death. You know,
right.
we sit in these places with electricity and air conditioning and criticize how the previous generations, you know, screwed us all over. And you know, it's important. And this is why the tension is real, because it is important to criticize the previous generation to the extent that you're trying to go farther.
Right.
But but you have to do that with an attitude of deep gratitude for what they've accomplished.
Yeah.
And you can communicate that, like, thank you, I honor you. And so, but there is tension there, because sometimes when you try to go farther in your generation, sometimes your parents can interpret that as
you're leaving us.
Yeah. Yeah. You're judging the way we raised you.
Yeah.
And you know, we can just sit down and have that conversation with them. No, I'm not. I am deeply appreciated. And a lot of times that's just a trigger. Like, I need to demonstrate my gratitude more clearly to my parents.
Yeah.
So that they don't have that misunderstanding about what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, my mom was the first kid on her street to go to college, you know, and my parents basically paid for most of all of our college, you know, and it's like a lot of kids my age, if that's your story, your parents made a huge sacrifice to do that for you,
yeah.
You know, and it's, yeah, it's the same thing. It's perpetuating, you know, that kind of thing.
Hey guys, did you know we have another podcast called 5 Minute Fatherhood? In it, Jeremy and I take 5 minutes every day to bring you a quick tip or piece of wisdom that will help equip and encourage you on your journey as a father living in God's design as the coach of your family team. Find it or listen and subscribe by searching 5 Minute Fatherhood on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or anywhere else podcasts are at.
So, when you think about anything else that you feel like contributed to the way that you think about fatherhood, I mean, even when you describe wanting to go farther in your generation, what does that look like to you? And how did you get that passion?
You know, I think, I've been really grateful to have a lot of people in my life that I have observed them and seen great families and a lot of different tools to understand, you know, what a biblical family is supposed to be like and how to raise children and the questions of how many kids should I have, what kind of job should I have, what kind of life should we live. You know, I just feel like a lot of that, I'm just stepping off of other people. You know, there's the study like SFL that kind of gets you even into the right mindset with the Brad Johnson and the Yitzhak, you know? And so, I think there's a lot of things that, have come through, sort of what's God speaking to his people.
Yeah.
And I think family is a big thing that, he wants to bring back.
Yeah.
And our culture is going the other way. So, for me, it's kind of like, even it just is so it's so ingrained in spirituality that you can't grow as a Christian and not,
yeah,
you know, come on that.
Yeah. So as you've been growing spiritually, it seems like as you've been thinking about the big picture, the story we're in, that's helped. And then of course your own family story, like these things have given you that passion, and you and Sammy, you know, started having kids right away. That's a pretty intense decision.
Yeah. I mean, I remember sitting down with Stephen Morey after our first SFL. It was my wife's first Bible study. She'd never read the Bible before. She got baptized during that. And we weren't dating. We were kind of friends. And I brought her, and then we started dating after that. And I went out to lunch with him, and he said, "There's really two narratives, man. You can be a single guy, or you can have a family, you know, and the Bible says that, it's good for a young man to have children in his youth."
Yeah.
And I kind of took that and I was like, that makes sense to me. And we got married and we started having kids.
Yeah.
We told everybody at our wedding, we're going to have 10 kids.
Oh, wow.
So we're halfway.
Nice.
But I don't know if we'll make
good
it.
Work.
Yeah.
That's you guys have come a long way. He said 7 years. I remember being at your wedding. Man, it was so epic just seeing you guys get married. There was so much. I don't know if I've ever been to a wedding quite where there was, it just felt like there was such, I don't know, like celebration around the family. Like we saw Sammy's family and she was so excited. Your family was there in force. The two families were together. Like, and now you got these.
It was awesome. Yeah. And honestly, when we had our fourth kid and our oldest was three, that was the hardest it was for us, as a family, as we have, as our older two have gotten older and they can now take more responsibility. It's actually getting easier to have more kids.
Yes. Getting over that initial hump where the oldest is trying to help.
And now the oldest can change diapers. My boy Ozzy is like, he wakes up and he's like, can I go make coffee? And so he makes our coffee every morning, and he's 4 years old. And so it's great. Yeah. So it's getting easier.
Yeah.
But there was a while there where we thought this is,
there's sometimes you just go into deep survival mode, and there are times where you do have to like pull back. I mean, that's tough.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about that. One of the reasons why I wanted to have you in, and you said to me like, hey, I've only been married 7 years. Like, should I really talk about fatherhood? And I'm like, yeah, I wanted you to come talk about, because I knew you were in the thick of it. And you guys have made decisions to try to figure out in the stage where you have lots of little kids and you're really going for it and you're experiencing all the pressure and hardship that entails, you start to sort of embrace tools or other things that, you know, a lot of times people in Western cultures, they don't fully understand how important they are unless they get into the situation you and Sammy are in. You're trying to build a big, strong family. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the things you guys are experiencing. Give me some examples. Like, what you've mentioned something about just the lifestyle design is a critical component.
Maybe one of the things that we did is if my wife is a stay-at-home mom, and to make stay-at-home life better, one of the things that we did was we moved right next door to some one of her best friends, and they have more kids than us, and she, and so they could be together. We lived right next door to them for like 3 or 4 years, and then they ended up moving to Oregon. But that having that infrastructure where you had friends who are in the same season as you and who can coach you and who can, you know, give you the moral support that you need. And you're not worrying about who your kids are playing with. You know, the family, you know, it just really, really was a huge win for us. And so when they moved and we were basically we needed more house because we were outgrowing the house we were in. We did the same thing. We moved right next door to another family. We didn't know them super well, but they have 5 girls and they're some of our closest friends now because you just understand, you got to kind of buckle down in the trenches and really kind of encourage each other to keep going.
So that's a really unusual way to decide where to live. Like, what house? Like
that literally has been our top thing of decide where to live. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the thing. I think a lot of guys sometimes when they start to capture a vision for having a larger family, they don't often start to reorder the priorities. So this is a great example. And I agree. I've seen this with a lot of families. Where you live, who is your neighbor? Is there any support around you? Is there, particularly for your wife, who's going to be there with the kids all day?
Yes. And if the baby monitor can reach to their house and you can keep an eye on things, then it opens up a world of possibilities.
Yes.
Because you can do lunch dates, but then you can also have a small group with adults in your house.
Yeah, put your kids down.
And kids are down. You can hang out on the porch at night and, you know, you can have that adult communal conversation and stuff that we need. You know, you have friends.
Yeah.
So that's been big. And then we have a lot of single adults that kind of are headed that direction who hang out with us too. And, so it's been good. Another lifestyle design is like the job that you work. I've been always searching for flexibility. It helps to get paid enough to support the family, but you know, right now the job that I'm in is a work from home job and it has really good benefits for paternity. And you know, for somebody like me, I'm a little different than I'm not an entrepreneur and having my own business, but it really works well because I can be there for breakfast and dinner every day. There's little travel. That's another thing that I just felt like I learned from my dad, seeing his change from being gone to being there, how much of a difference that made. Hmm. I want to try to give that to my kids and be present and with them.
How do you balance that? Like anything that you found that, I always think about these sort of different modes when you're trying to work in proximity with your kids. They're sort of like, I need to be totally focused right now. Here's a bunch of tasks where I can be, you know, maybe 80% focused and still be fairly productive. And then there are some times where you just have to, you know,
spend
time with your kids.
So I have a home office. When the doors close, they don't come in.
Okay.
You know, that's
the signal. Like you're.
And then I can go up. If Sammy needs to leave, I can kind of go up. If she needs to go to the store or something, I can just be there.
Okay.
So it just gives us a lot of flexibility. There's times when, I'm on a long conference call and I can push them on a swing or, you know, do that kind of stuff.
You ever see that video of that guy that was like on TV and his kids came bursting into his office?
I loved how like it got a warm reception.
Yeah.
People were like, we understand.
Yeah.
That's cool. You're not a robot. You're a real human being.
That's right.
I love that.
And he looked like a robot until that moment. He was like,
some emotion.
All we care about is your disembodied head and what you could tell us about the financial markets. And then your little 3-year-old or 1-year-old with this huge smile comes, you know, with his whatever it was. It was such a classic work from home, but
I know, cool I love picture. That.
So you're there, you got kind of some rules around that so that you can be productive.
Yeah, and another thing, like from a lifestyle design is we try to keep technology at bay. So like we have a projector that we sometimes watch movies on, but there's not a TV that's kind of the focal point of our area where we hang out, you know? And my wife and I have limits on how much we can be on our phones because we want to be there with our kids in relation with them.
When you say limits, how do you do that? Or do you just,
we have an app called Moment that tracks your screen time.
Oh, and cool.
So I just say, if I am always just trying to be under an hour every day, then, you know, that works for me.
Nice.
You know? So some people get like the old Nokia phones.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, but that's what, and we try to keep our kids off screens.
That's cool.
Because we want to try to give them a childhood where their imagination is at work and they're figuring out how to play and how to, you know.
What do you guys do when you feel like your kids, you know, need to be occupied and, you know, what a parent would typically pull out the screen?
You know, that's the thing. We went through a transition about last August where we just decided, look, because that's the thing, right? Like for us, it's right before dinner. That's what Sammy calls it, the witching hour, where everyone is just, that's when we would normally put on. The thing is when we put our kids in front of a screen or we give them a treat to occupy them, they kind of come out being worse off than they were before. And so we had to, you know, a lot of things when we're kind of rolling out new programs for our kids, it's like, there's just a big blow up in the mess, you know? And it maybe lasts a week to a month, and then it gets better after that, you know? And so when we want to preoccupy them, we can say, go play on the playset outside, which our neighbor's father bought them.
Nice.
Giant playset, which is another benefit of living next door to somebody. Go to the basement, you know, play, go do your coloring. There's so many things that they love doing that they'd be more than happy to do.
So you're saying that you have to kind of bear through maybe the withdrawal.
Right.
Like, and a lot of people can't get through that. They just...
Yeah, we're not watching shows anymore, guys.
And then there's... It's going to get worse.
Because if the option is watch a show or color or play outside, they will pick watch a show every single time.
Yeah.
And so when we remove that, then the next best option becomes the best option.
So then they get used to that and they're like, oh, okay, I'll go play outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense. Cool. So that's one thing, lifestyle. And then we also talked a little bit about just training discipline. Like, talk to me about what you guys have learned about that.
Yeah. So, and this is, you know, obviously a hot button topic with society in general. But I've had a great mentor and a guy named Steve Emanuel. And I actually, one of the amazing, most amazing things was I was in Houston and I stayed with his parents for a weekend. And I had a bunch of conversations with them about how they raised Steven and why wow. they did the things they do. That's and cool. it was unbelievable. But really, you know, assuming the role of the authority in the home, okay, your way goes.
Yeah.
And what you decide is, you know, they do what you ask them to do. And it goes back to training kids to one day follow God. We want our kids to immediately obey the voice of God.
Yeah.
And so we have to train them to immediately obey our voice.
Yeah.
And so that means, you know, when we ask them to do something, they do it right away. That means when they tell them not to do something, they don't do it. And for anyone who knows kids, there's a lot of goodness in kids and there's a lot of bentness in kids to do their own thing. And so it's a long journey. We're not where we want to be, but we're basically trying to get to a place where, you know, we're in a really healthy way.
In terms of, well, you made the statement, like the authority in the home, like, so in my way goes, which I know for a lot of people, when they think about that, they immediately assume that you're being selfish, right? Like anyone who takes authority is doing it because they want their will to happen so that they get what they want at the expense of everyone else in the family. And I think a lot of times, if that's your paradigm of authority, that authority is a power grab by which somebody gets their own way, then you have good reason not to like what you just said.
Right.
There's another paradigm, which is that we're actually people who are designed to live under authority, and that we exist in a larger community, and that could be in the family, that could be in the kingdom, and that we need to learn how to orbit other people, and that actually allows room for us to live in a much more complex set of relationships, and that it's actually an act of service for someone to step forward who's sort of has the proper mantle to take authority and to begin to structure the world that this group lives in so that it functions properly,
right.
Not for their own selfish benefit. And I think this is a big collision, and it's okay to resist this idea of authority if you're, you know, if you for whatever reason don't believe that that's a good
right.
thing, but it's important not to mistake it for the first thing I mentioned.
Right.
That's not what you're trying to do. So
no.
Yeah. And so I know that's
no, because I'm a man under authority.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right? The Bible lays out that Jesus was submitted to God.
Right.
And that man is submitted to Jesus, and that woman is submitted to man.
Yeah.
And then the kids follow.
Yeah.
And we try to practice that, you know, in our house. And I mean, I can't, one of the things that my friend Steven's mom, Linda, told me is she says, in our home, we say it one time, and if it doesn't happen, there's discipline. Okay? So you know, we all know the family or the times when we're yelling at our kids, do this, do this, do this. We get so frustrated, they're not listening. And then we end up flying off the handle and we're angry. And we you know, then the discipline happens then. And so we're training our kids that I really don't have to listen to what mom or dad says until their voice starts getting louder, till they start shouting and I see that they're angry, right? So we implemented this. We sat our kids down. We said, look, we've done you a disservice, not disciplining you the way God wants us to. And so from now on, we're just going to say something one time and we want you to listen right away. And it was tough because, you know, we hadn't trained them. So it was our fault. We stuck with it. Consistency in my mind is the most important thing. We stuck with it. And I can't tell you how much peace and joy we have in our house and with our kids now that at least the expectation is there that I say one thing one time, we're not yelling at them, you know, we're not, you know, disciplining them when we're angry. It's just, this is the way we're going to do things.
Hey guys, did you know that me and Jeremy created a special fatherhood masterclass we do online called The Skill of Fatherhood? If you want to immediately level up your father's skills and learn an entire system with tips and tricks and philosophy and help that we believe can fundamentally change your family's life forever, then this masterclass is for you. There's an entire module on the skill of training your kids with about 8 teaching videos in that one. There's an entire module you get on the skill of coaching your family as a team on mission with 8 or more videos in that one, including multiple interviews with a bunch of families doing this and how they do that. And an entire module on the skill of building multi-generational legacy and vision for your family with about 7 or 8 videos on that. The masterclass also comes with a workbook that walks you through the process so you never feel overwhelmed but feel equipped and encouraged and ready to start leading your family in a bigger and better direction starting today. And we wanted to hook you guys up. So our podcast listeners, if that's you and you're listening, we want to give you an exclusive deal that we aren't doing anywhere else online. So if you want to get $20 off the masterclass right now today, then head to familyteams.com and use the code DADS. That's DADS at familyteams.com. Again, that's the code DADS to get $20 off at familyteams.com.
Wow. So that's I think the way you described, there's so much joy and peace in our house. And I think that's, I know we had a similar experience in our house where it was, you know, really a challenge to try to train our kids to listen to us the first time we said something. And it was for me and for my wife, it was such a massive transition in how well we were able to parent our kids. I think this is another one of those cases in which if you have 1 or 2 kids, you can imagine a scenario where maybe if you let the kids go for a long time before they obey you, you might, if you're a saint, yeah, have the patience to chase your kids around. And
you can get away with it. Yeah. With 1 or 2 kids.
But man, when you have 3, 4, 5 little kids, and you have a potential desire to go past that, to try to manage a household like that, where there is no respect for authority, and where basically your kids are learning how to manipulate the system to get what they want, and there's not, it just falls apart so terribly, and it's a tragedy for everyone involved.
Yeah.
And I think people have to have deep understanding and empathy for a lot of what the Bible says about discipline comes with the assumption that you're trying to build a large, strong family.
Yeah.
And I think works for smaller families too. And support.
Well, in Hebrews 12, it was like assume that right. Fathers discipline their kids.
Yeah. And that the kids would grow up and appreciate it and understand, you know, my dad did this because he loved me. And that's actually the point of Hebrews 12 is he's trying to make this really interesting point, which is you should really appreciate God's discipline because that's how you know God loves you. And this is what's so ironic about our culture, because our culture says that's how you know that a father doesn't love his children if he disciplines them. That's how you know a father is being selfish if he disciplines. And so we're getting such crazy mixed messages. We just took a family team's tour to Amish country this weekend and a few other places. And one of the Amish men one of the Amish women, I asked, we went to a schoolhouse. She's like, anybody have any questions? I'm like, I had a question. Do you guys have the same discipline method? And she says, you know, we practice biblical discipline in our schools. And I was like, okay, I know that's code for. Yeah. The Board of Education is used.
Yeah. The Board of Education.
I was,
we practice biblical discipline in our house.
Yeah. Well. I thought that phrase was so funny. But I certainly understand it. And I'm like, yeah, this is a conversation that we need to have in the church. Amongst each other, because the Bible does seem to have this expectation that there's going to be order in the home that's going to be maintained, and kids are going to try to thwart that order. And what are the array of tools that mothers and fathers need to be equipped with to bring peace and joy into the family?
There will be folly bound up in the heart of a child.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the job of the parent to eradicate that and get it out. And we do have tools for that. But it's interesting when you're saying just about, like, you know, when you have a couple kids, you know, you think about the people you really admire. A lot of the parents that I really admire, they have 4, 5, 6 kids because you can't fake that. You have to address this issue. And I know a lot of really godly peers and they haven't been on top of discipline, and they're at two kids, and they're like, I think we're probably going to be done.
Yeah.
Because, and that's like something I'm passionate about that I really want to help, because, yeah. because it's God's way. God wants godly offspring. He wants us to multiply. He wants us to, you know, fill and subdue the earth. And it's a whole lot easier when your house is in order.
Right. That's so. Right. Yeah. I don't think that we often fully acknowledge the fact that this does put a major constraint on the size of the family. And you know, when I think about one of the greatest tragedies of a small family, when you could have had a bigger family, I know it doesn't mean that there's many cases in which a small family is great, but there are cases that certainly where the parents just, they just get to a place where they're just too tired to have more children because of the lack of order. And
we've been there.
Yeah, we understand.
For sure.
And I think that taking breaks, one of the things I tell a lot of parents is a lot of times they go straight for the permanent solution to stop having children. And sometimes it's good to have a break. Sometimes it's good to have some training. And sometimes it's good to call it, you know, done because you really believe that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But you know, be careful when you're making that decision. I think a lot about the siblings and the future. You know, when I primarily think about family size, I primarily think about my kids in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. That's much more in my head when I think about family size than how many kids do me and April want to have in our house when they're like five? I mean, like, that's a very small number.
Yeah.
That I want to, I mean, I love my kids, but that's a really hard season.
It's the long game.
It's the long game, yeah.
It's like, we realize that we are sacrificing a lot of our life right now.
Yeah.
But when our kids are 30, it's going to be awesome.
Yes.
It's going to be like, so great.
Yeah, if you've ever seen a multi-generational family that loves each other, the siblings love each other into the 30s, 40s, they work as a team in various aspects, whether it's even their work life or their ministry. If you've ever seen that, it is such a beautiful thing that you are giving your children by giving them siblings and by raising a family where there is joy and peace. So there's not deep bitterness between siblings as they get older or deep anger towards the parents. But if you can imagine a situation where there's a large family, lots of siblings, joy and peace, great order, it multiplies in its influence, in its strength, and its depth of experience of relationship into the future when the cousins and it's just like it's epic what could happen. And that's and if you haven't ever seen that, it's understandable why you would probably be scratching your head saying, "Well, just stop having kids." I mean, come on.
Yeah, right.
That's the right answer. But hey, it depends on what you're aiming for.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool. And then you guys, what are some things you guys are thinking through in terms of how to, like, how you're spiritually leading the family, especially with these little ones?
I think we've really had a shift in, our spirituality from, you know, really centering around a church or a small group or a house church or something like that to really bringing that home. And one of the things that has been really great for us is just reading a chapter of the Bible at breakfast and dinner. And, you know, some days, you know, you're training your kids just to sit still, which is beneficial. And then other days we actually have some really meaningful conversations. And that has been really good for me as being in a leadership role and doing that and keeping myself in the Word. It's been good for Sammy because, you know, she's up all night. She's not having quiet times, like, you know, but she gets it then. And it's also been good of just honoring the Bible and showing the importance of God's revelation to us as truth. And so that, you know, we do memory verses, but we want our kids to really know that God's word is really important and we believe it's true, but also it gives them the sense of the boundaries, right? They get to understand what is right and what is wrong. And we're setting them up for a life of success because they're not going to go out and try to steal money from their job because we've taught them the Ten Commandments, you know, and giving them that foundation. And when there's arguments in the house, it's something to appeal to.
Yeah.
It's, you know, who's right here? Well, let's see what the Bible says about this, you know. And I just noticed it's good for every single person in the family, you know, to be engaged in some way. I also believe in family dinners. I heard a stat that the one thing in common that National Honor Society students had was they had a family meal, like at least like 5 times a week or something like that. Like that was their consistent thing. And this is a time where we can do high lows, we can talk, we can see how everybody's doing, we can check in, we can enjoy some delicious food, and I feel like that's been a huge win for us.
There's a couple of things you said that I want to just tease out at the big picture level. So you mentioned like, so sometimes Sammy doesn't have time, so it's like she's, you know, that for breakfast and dinner she's going to get time in the Word. And I think for a lot of Christians, we were raised in this idea that, you know, there's this famous painting I always think about, which is old man, you know, with his daily bread, his Bible open, all by himself with his hand. Like that's a spiritual person.
Yeah.
Is the person all alone with their Bible. And that's awesome. And I do that every morning. I mean, it's a big deal. Like, but there are seasons, and in the Bible, people didn't have Bibles, you know, like in most biblical history.
Yeah.
This was a communal activity, and the smallest unit of community is the family. And so, a lot of times people don't even think about what you're describing. They're like, we have to find a way to protect everyone's quiet time, which oftentimes that's a great thing to do.
Right.
But what about like, let's get together and pray. Let's get together and read. Like a lot of times people, that doesn't fit their paradigm of how to grow my relationship with God.
Yeah. And I mean, I felt guilt because as a single person, I'm doing an hour and a half of prayer and journaling and Bible reading every morning, you know? And then you start having kids and your sleep schedule is getting a little thrown off. And I was feeling guilty that I wasn't doing that. And I remember God just saying to me like, dude, times are changing. Like that's not the only way, you know, and it gave me so much freedom to just be like, when there's a moment with your kid where you're doing something, you can pray and ask God, how do I handle this? And then you can turn that into a teaching opportunity. And, you know, it's a much more day-long thing than just like the huge. I mean, I still try to do that, but.
Walking with God in front of your kids like that, they need to see all of that.
I mean, right.
Because a lot of times what they're wondering, and I certainly did, and I think it's fair, is this just sort of like a private thing? Or is this really, how does this, you know, how does this infect every other area of your life? And this is a great way to do this. So you also mentioned like, you know, taking a step back from Bible studies and having more of a family centered. And, you know, one of the things that I know that I wrestle with in this area is there is this buzzword that is just, you know, so important to the church right now. That's community. It's coming mostly out of the fact that we go to worship services that are fairly impersonal, and we have to find places where we can build relationships. So we've got these small groups and communities, and they're super critical that we actually know each other. But the Bible says very little about that sort of small group unit. I mean, it's sort of a reaction to the big group of the worship service, and it's super important. We do a lot of things in that context, but I don't know how much of this is actually flowing out of a lack of community that should be happening in the family. Like a lot of times with people, you know, we say people need intimacy, people need relationships, people need to be known, people need to belong. These are all kind of the buzzwords we use in the church when we are promoting community. Which ironic.
Sounds like a healthy family.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, that's what we're saying. People need identity. People need to belong. People need, you know, so it's a family people need. And the church is a spiritual family. But it's important to emphasize that. And sometimes the church like doesn't really want to, or doesn't fully seem to understand that it's important to emphasize and to build up what is happening inside of the home as sort of the foundation for community, you know, and you guys are doing that by really focusing.
Yeah. The dad has to be the spiritual authority of your home. And if you're outsourcing that, it can be a problem.
Yeah.
But I remember, you know, we would have discipleship groups in our house, you know, when we were young, married, and it got to the point where we started having so many kids, like it just practically didn't work. You know, we couldn't do either one well. And I have the heart of an evangelist. Like I want everybody to know how good God is. And it felt like my, and I think you've touched on this in another one of your episodes, but it felt like I was wasting my time with my family, and I wasn't able to get to my ministry because of that. And the Lord has taken me through a shift in the last couple of years of thinking long term and going like, no, this, if you want a lot of people to know about God, if you have a bunch of kids and they go out and they do that, I'm going to be more effective than me trying to raise kids and do that, you know, at the same time. And so, a lot of our, you know, spirituality and religious routines are, do they work for our family, you know, and are they equipping us to be good parents and that yes. kind of thing. And so we do go to, my dad's church. They have a really great focus on building strong families and equipping dads. And, I go and I have all my kids with me because I want it to be, you know, they're getting trained while we're together. And I want to be gone, you know, and, you know, it's been a good thing, but if it, you know, we've taken periods of time where we haven't done that because it hasn't been suitable for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, when you guys read chapters of the Bible, you got really young kids. Mm-hmm. How does that go? Like, do they get it? Do you have to be careful of where you're reading? Like, how do you work through?
So our 1 year old, his job is to learn how to be quiet when adults are speaking. Okay. Our 2 year old, she is learning the books of the Bible because I ask her what book we're in every day. Hmm. And we kind of go through, we've just been reading through the New Testament. We're in 2 Corinthians right now.
Okay.
And so she says 2 Corinthians, you know. And there's some days that she will surprise you and she will pick up a word and she'll say, oh, this is just like that, you know. And really? Then my 4 and 5 year olds, they, you know, I want them to start to get some of the real basic fundamentals. Yeah. And, you know, and everybody is learning that the Bible is important and dad cares about it.
Yeah.
You know? But they're also learning how to sit still and to be quiet and to pay attention.
Well, that's, you know, that there's that famous phrase, the medium is the message. It's like sometimes what is being communicated isn't what's on the page. It's the fact that we just spent 20 minutes sitting here, like watching dad be really passionate about something and we love him and it matters to us.
Yeah.
That can happen to kids at a very young age. They start to pick up that passion. If their relationship with their father is warm and close and trusting, that's a powerful thing that, you know, our kids pick up so much more than whatever the direct content is that's attempted. That's one of the sort of tragedies of modern education is that kids are learning, you know, they may be learning science and math or whatever, but they're learning 1,000 other things. And some of those things aren't going to necessarily bode well for them in the future, you know, and this is why there's this conversation about how are we crushing kids' creativity or whatever, because they're learning other things, which is things that kind of get crushed out of you in maybe a particular educational setting. So this is to be in the home, to learn that the Bible is a place to be read in the home, that spiritual conversations happen in the home, that there's all these other lessons that are being learned. And a lot of people would say, that's not a good idea if you do that to your kids. Everything you should do should be age appropriate. I mean, VeggieTales, you know, like that's...
I mean, if you read a kid's Bible to them, what are they going to want to read? You know?
Yeah.
It's like every time they want to do the kid's Bible story.
Yes.
Which is not really the Word of God.
So that's actually like that tension you guys actually are, that's part of what you're navigating. You're like, I want them to love the real thing. Why don't you should just learn to read it to them in Greek and Hebrew?
I should. I may.
That's right.
I mean, but it's also like, you know, like we had a conversation yesterday at lunch about the word aroma, where it's used, the aroma of Christ. Yeah. And they didn't know what that word meant. Hmm. And so we got to talk to them about that word.
Awesome.
And so we're teaching them English. And a lot of parenting is just talking a lot to your kids.
Yeah.
And this is another way to do that.
I love it. Man, I love it. I can't wait to hear this. I have not heard of that sort of particular rhythm of just like, let's read a chapter. But what you're describing of I care deep, like, you know what each child is learning and specifically, and then you know the sort of bigger picture thing they're learning, which is this is worth it.
And you can put little treasure hunts in. Like when we read through John, Jesus makes 7 I am statements.
Hmm.
So they're like, So they would find one and they'd notice it. And this is mainly my oldest. And then we'd write it on the board, you know, oh, I am the bread of life. I am, you know, so stuff like that too is fun.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. That's really cool. And do you and Sammy sometimes get into just sort of
sidebars? Yeah. What does this really mean? And then, so then we can, we can let the kids kind of go on and we'll talk about it.
That's cool. That's another thing that I think is.
And if we have guests for dinner, we ask them to join in.
Oh, that's cool.
And talk about it. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
So I also said, I asked you if there's any question you were wrestling with that maybe we could tease out together.
Yeah. It seems like, you know, it seems like a lot of what I'm trying to do is, has been, sort of reactive. Like a problem has come up, like, hey, we have three kids that are really close together and they're wild. How do we do it? And then we learn about child training and stuff like that. And how do you sort of stay ahead of things? And like, I would love to know, what should I be thinking of right now? Like, what's coming down the pike? How do you, when we have, you know, when we call our children's name and they all come here, you know, and we've taught them how to clear the table and do the dishes, like, what should I be, what's the next thing? Mm. What should I teach them then, you know? Yeah. And that kind of thing. Because it seems like I am my kids' biggest bottleneck sometimes. It seems like if I had this down better, they wouldn't struggle with it, you know? So it's sort of like, and I really don't know what having a six-year-old is like.
Right.
Because my oldest just turned five.
Yeah. So that's a challenge, man. I mean, there's two things that come to mind, you know, on both sides of the spectrum. One is that it's okay for you to be discipled by your family. Like there's a certain inevitability to that and a certain design to that. God has decided, I love Michael. I'm going to give him a bunch of kids and he's going to like run into brick walls all over the place. And then he's going to like start asking questions and that's going to, and you know, that happens. And that's, I think that's why the Bible says children are a blessing to fathers, because that's how we learn. It's like we need to learn to rule and God gives us a family and says, it was his decision. And that's what I keep saying to myself. I'm like, I never would have risked me as a, you know, 20.
Yeah. That's so funny. I'm laughing because my neighbor said to me yesterday, we were talking about some friends that they had just met, and it's a married couple, and you know, they're a little immature, and you know, they have some things that they're working on, and Ross, my neighbor, looked over at me. He says, "You know what I think they need? I think they need a kid."
Yes,
that'll mature them up real fast.
That's true, and it's like, it's really important to embrace that, to like receive that as a gift from God. Like, you've given me a really hard job that I am not qualified for, not equipped for perfectly, and through wrestling with this work, I'm going to grow and mature and become more like you. And God's willing to make that trade-off. He's willing to give you that responsibility. And that's just, he loves you that much. I mean, that's how I think we need to receive it, as a gift of love. So that's one side of it, is to sort of know that there's an inevitability and a design to that reactiveness you're just talking about. Like, another reality to that side of things is that you oftentimes don't even hear answers to questions you're not asking. Like, I heard one person say that it's really hard when you read the Bible to even pay attention to things that you're not questions you're not asking. That's why when you reread, that's why you should read the Bible over and over again, because every year you're asking different questions and you'll read a passage like, I can't believe I never heard this before. Like, I know I read this last year. You weren't asking that question last year. You are this year. And I think that's okay. Like, so I think that's just part of the reality of, that's the purpose of really this particular time in history, is this, the human race, God is raising up sons, you know, for the kingdom. And we're all being raised up in that way. But on the other side of things, okay, so there is, there certainly is like an intentionality that's important as well. And, you know, I tell my daughter Kelsey all the time, we joke about this sometimes, you know, just, she's our guinea pig. I'm sorry, like, it wasn't my idea, you know, to learn on my kids, but that's what God's idea. And so you know, I talked to her about, like, there are things I do with Kyra, who's 9, and Kelsey's 18, you know, that I'm just more skilled. I care about things in the right priority better than I did when I was raising Kelsey. And so that's part of the beauty of having lots of kids and even having them longer in your, into your life. Like, a lot of people don't think about that, but April and I both joke, like, when we raise our fifth kid, we'll now be ready to be parents, you know?
Yeah.
And I think there's some real reality to that. Like, I know a number of families who almost have like two sets of kids. They have like their family, their four or five kids they raise, and then they either have more or adopt three or four kids and do it again when they have a lot more skill. Yeah, that's a pretty cool thing for some people that feel called to that. But yeah, in terms of being intentional, I this is why we desperately need each other. Like, I don't think there's any replacement for having conversations with people that are upstream. You have to set up a series of upstream relationships, you know. And I think having there's a and I have this relationship with one father who calls me every other week, and just says like really directly, like, tell me what, you know, what would you do in this situation? What should I be looking out for? And I know he has that relationship with a couple others. I think that's really valuable. I wish more, you know, I know I needed that. I definitely leaned on a few dads who were upstream. I didn't have as many as I wish I could have had. But I think that the more we have that, and this is even the reason why I'm doing some of these, one of the reasons why I want you on, you know, it'd be great to have this podcast when you've been a father for 20 years. My concern is that there's a dad out there that's listening right now who's 3 or 4 years into their marriage or 2 or 3 kids into their family building. All their kids are 3 and under, and they're like, what? Bible time with, you know, like,
yeah.
Could I do that now? Like, training my kids, like, lifestyle design, like, all the things you mentioned are all extremely helpful for those families.
Yeah.
And I do think there's a lack of this kind of content and conversation, you know?
Yeah.
But there's also a downside, which we always have to be super careful of. And that is that we don't, impress on other families vehicles that worked really well for us, and we promote them as, you know, the way to do things.
Yeah.
You know, like, here's the new rule. So that's why I really like when he emerges as a natural question. Give yourself grace to like work out that question with other fathers, and know there is going to be lag time. There's going to be the fact that you're going to run into an issue, you're going to search for the answer, you're going to find something you feel like fits you and Sammy and your family, you're going to want to implement that. And you're going to have a bit of regret for the months or years that you didn't know that thing. I don't think there's no way to avoid that totally.
Man, that's really good. You know the story of Abraham and Isaac when he was sacrificing Isaac, and then the ram was in the bushes. Mm-hmm. And then it's one of my favorite parts of the Bible because it's kind of like, and that's where the saying came from. That's still told today. On the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided.
Yes.
And that's kind of how it's felt. My parenting journey is like, when you get there,
yes,
you'll figure it out.
Yes. and there's that generational thing. Like, you know, you guys are asking questions you mentioned to your parents, and your kids will do the same for you. We're asking our parents questions. Like, as this gets more robust and as more and more generationally we raise our kids, our kids are going to have so many things to pull from, tools that we discovered. Yeah. I think part of this too is to really treasure the fact that you're in a multi-generational project and your job is to take ground and not to win the whole war.
And there's beginning to be so many resources, you know, how to sleep train a baby, how to get them on a schedule, how to correct your kids, you know, like, and so it's really exciting because I feel like, you know, children are seen in this culture as really wild and hard to deal with and expensive, but the biblical view is that they're actually blessings, and one who is disciplined is actually a joy to the father, and one who's not disciplined is a shame to, you know, is a shame. So it's really exciting because when you do have the moments where, you know, your child listens to you, and it's just really, really awesome.
Yeah, so, I like that when you talk about like the gift of being able to train a child, and for a father, man, it is I want dads to know it's fun. It's going to have hard, exhausting seasons, but it is a gift to us as well, just to learn how to be like you made the really strong consistency. That is for me, that was very challenging for a lot of dads. I had to grow up so much to be a consistent trainer of my children. That was a exceptionally difficult thing for me. I love being spontaneous. I was, you know, yeah. there's a side of me that was just like had to die for me to become yeah. that kind of a person. But once I really embraced it, like something erupted in me that was totally new. And it was like a passion for training that yeah. I never even knew I had.
And it's really fun because you can train anything you want into your kids, yeah. you know? And so like one of the things that we're doing right now is we say, children, come here. And the expectation is that they do an about face and start running towards us and yell, coming. And it's really cute when you have all these little kids yelling, yeah. coming and running at you. You yeah. know, it's just fun. It's good. And it's practical for when you're out and about, but it's fun.
Yeah. And I, you know, another thing that I love in terms of train, and this is a little bit different than training, but it was kind of speaks to your point about what I'm passionate about. Mike, like I'm a huge Lord of the Rings Tolkien fanatic, and my kids all just absolutely love this stuff because, you know, they've been, I've just wanted to share my passion with them since I was young. And it is really weird to have these adults now in my life who love everything I love at a level that is so genuine
yeah.
and so beautiful and so fun for us to share together. And they love all kinds of things that, you know, that I didn't teach them and that I'm learning from them. But it's like, it is really weird though to have these distinctives like all over my kids because I wanted to train and share all the things that, you know, it's like, it's such a cool thing to be given. And that the idea that no, you're damaging your kids. They're a blank slate and you keep them as blank as you possibly can yeah. for as long
as you
can.
You only give them what you got. You got to give them something.
Oh yeah. They need it. And that's kind of goes all the way back full circle to the thing we've talked about in the beginning, which is, look, God designed it this way. You're going to show your kids what fatherhood's like. You're going to fill that bucket one way or another. You're going to fill it with your passiveness. You're going to fill it with your activeness. You're going to fill it with, you know, your love. You're going to fill it with your neglect. You're going to fill it.
Yeah.
So
and knowing that should give you a healthy fear of yeah, how you live your life.
Yeah. Live it and just know that was God's decision. You're going to fill that bucket. So do it intentionally. Do it thoughtfully. You know, and embrace.
This podcast is a big help to do that as well.
Thanks. So, thank you. Trying to figure out how to get more, so sort of just more conversation around how to do this because I know it's a challenge. So, Michael, it's been awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talking to you.
Thank you.
It's been a great conversation.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Love watching how you and Sammy are building your family.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. That's all we have for today's episode. Remember, you have what it takes as a father equipped by the Holy Spirit to lead your family as a multi-generational team on mission. And as always, remember to let us know what you thought about today's episode at Family Teams on Instagram, at Family Teams on Facebook. Search for us there, easy to find, and you will find us. And let us know what you thought, whether something that stood out, something that was encouraging, or some feedback you would like to give us. All right, have a great rest of the day.